Good morning, although it is exceptionally early in the morning. I used to call this the witching hour coming up. I think it is technically the witching hour for many, but then others will say it's midnight now, as almost like one of those another example of that Mandela effect. Is the witching hour 3 a.m. or midnight? Huh. Anywho, it's Dan in Little Saigon, and it is January the 24th, 2019, and this is a Little Saigon report. Although, when I call these reports, people probably think I'm going about Little Saigon, asking, Mr. and Mrs. Ching or Chong about what kind of food they're cooking or what the situation, and I don't know, Vietnam is these days, but no. No, I don't walk about Saigon asking questions about the state of Saigon here in Little Saigon. It's just a report of situations, stuff that happens. You don't have to take anything too seriously, right? I mean, that's what they say on TV. So don't take this too seriously. Today's report slash topic, when really in reality topic, has to do with being disgusted with people, And I want to do this in three parts, but I may screw that up. So here's part one. Sometimes you're going to wake up in the morning and you're going to hate everybody. I don't mean some people. I don't mean just your boss or just somebody, an old friend that screwed you. I don't mean one or two people. Sometimes everybody wakes up in the morning and they hate everyone. I know you won't admit this. You'll say you love everyone all the time. And I've met Christians who will say this, but I've always suspected the one or two Christians that have told me this have been liars, Sometimes everybody wakes up in the morning and hates everybody. Sometimes you will wake up and you'll say, I hate my dog. I hate my cat. I hate that bird outside the window. I hate that kid down the street. I hate that old person that makes that weird old person face. I hate that young couple because they look like they're in love. I hate that middle-aged couple because they probably, are just miserable and disgusting, and I hate them. And clearly, if you're going to hate everybody, you have to emphasize hatred of the Danes and the Danish people. But that's a whole separate side topic that we don't need to discuss at this moment. Yeah, you're going to wake up. You're going to say to yourself, I hate everybody. I hate black people. I hate brown people. I hate yellow people. I hate pink people. If you go and have a billion tattoos, I hate you the most. If you do this body carving shit, oh my God, what the fuck are you doing, dude? You think the person cutting into you actually knows how to use an autoclave or keep his or her instruments sterile? Fuck, I hate you. I hate gay people. My God, do I hate gay people? They have, in fact, decided upon themselves to become their own court of inquisition, going about figuring out who hates them. You know what? Maybe everybody hates you, but if everyone doesn't hate you, you can be sure of this, gay people. I hate you. Sometimes you're going to wake up in the morning, you're going to hate everybody. Sometimes you just do. And that doesn't mean you're evil. It doesn't mean you're going to become Adolf Hitler, okay? Hitler didn't just wake up one morning. I'm going to let you know a little secret about Hitler and Stalin and Mao Zedong. And all the great ones, let's not forget fucking Pol Pot. Shit. How can we forget Pol Pot? I include Jim Jones. And yeah, every president in my lifetime, pretty much. Just because you wake up one morning hating everybody doesn't mean you're going to become some evil scumbag. Doesn't mean you're going to become Ted Bundy and stalk people and kill them. Sometimes you just do, and that's okay. I'm not saying you should act on it. Frankly, if it happens rarely enough, like let's say if it only happens once a quarter, which these days, If you only wake up once every 90 days hating everybody, you're doing quite well, in my opinion, for the situation on planet Earth. If you only wake up once every 3 months and hate everybody, then I think you're doing pretty well. As long as it's not fractional. Like, well, I hate everybody once every 3 months, and then, you know, the other day it's only 90% of the people. That's probably not good. But I hope you understand what I'm saying, you know. Treat this as almost a virtual exclusion, which means most days you're just normally, you know, not really hating everybody, right? Maybe just holding petty grudges. People hold petty grudges. Don't worry about it. That happens. But yeah. Some days you're going to wake up, and this is the second part, and you're going to feel like everybody hates you. I'm telling you, you will. And some of us feel like that probably more often than we should. And probably it feels exaggerated. Like you wake up, like I wake up most days these days, as I stare down the double-barreled shotgun of reality, and I recognize that very shortly my choices are going to be extremely finite and not that great. And it's not some Greek tragedy. In the last few years, I have made some mistakes. Some of which I made for good reasons. Some of which I made in response to being screwed. You know, being taken advantage of. You know, I started the year 2016 with virtually no debt. By the end of 2016... I was deeply in debt, and by the end of 2017, I was essentially just financially obliterated. And this last year, I've had a couple contracts, one at Microsoft, which was horrible, horrible, horrible experience working at the Universal Store for Buddy, I'll just say Buddy. But yeah, it was shitty, and I was surrounded by Chinese people, and I gotta tell you something, these were H-1B visas, these were not, you know, Asian Americans, and yeah, they seemed like very duplicitous, shitty fucking people. Now, do I hate all Chinese people? No. But I think I hated some of those people, and it wasn't because they were Chinese, it was because they were assholes. Anyway, some mornings, you're going to wake up and you're going to think everybody hates you. You know, let's go eat some worms. And sometimes that sense of just feeling like everyone hates you could be overwhelming. You can just say to yourself, well, you know what? If I'm just worthless, if I'm just a piece of shit, then why don't I just take and, you know, just disappear? Wouldn't it be better if I were gone? That's the thing. You'll wake up and say to yourself, everybody hates me. I'm a piece of shit. I'm the biggest failure. I'm a loser. I'm a scumbag. If my life is a mess, it's because I'm a mess. If my reality is bullshit, it's because I'm bullshit. Maybe the only fair thing I can say is reality sucks and I suck too. This whole thing is just a big shit bag. Way worse than, you know, Lars von Trier's Melancholia. Fuck, man. That's a movie right there. That sums it all up. Maybe all of life is bogus because I'm bogus. I'm a piece of shit. You're going to wake up. You'll feel that way at least once in your life, you know? And if you've never felt like that, if you've never felt the sense that everybody thinks you're a piece of shit, you know, God bless you. But most days of my life, and this is the truth, maybe only 50%, but if you knew that, and then you knew it wasn't all evenly distributed, if I told you that it felt like more than 50% and not evenly distributed, like not like, well, it's randomly every other day, that would actually suck enough. It's more like months and years of every single day waking up and knowing that everybody thinks you're a piece of shit. And then when you have, you know, good times, when you think you might have friends, you're always asking yourself, do these people really give a shit? But everybody, every single person that's ever been born, that has consciousness, that has awareness, every single person you know, including you, and probably your cat, every single person you know will wake up and think everybody hates them. And it's not true, obviously, for the simple fact that people are too fucking lazy. I mean, it's just, you know, if you wanted to think of all the possible reasons, they're too distracted and too fucking lazy to give a shit about you. Everybody, okay? I'm not trying to be mean. People aren't, you know, nobody wants to waste their time, okay? I'm not saying some people don't hate you. Some people probably hate you. I hate to break it to you. Some people do, but not everybody. You know, if you have a big family, if you come from a big family like I do, and you've had some of the experiences that I've had, which who knows, maybe most of you have had, you might end up most days thinking, I hate at least half my siblings. Maybe I hate most of them. And in this particular example, since we're on point two, I think most of my siblings hate me. And most of my nieces and nephews, if not all of them, probably think I'm a worthless piece of shit, like Uncle Dan. I mean, they like the whole isn't he funny thing. But what they don't realize is that that belies something else below the surface. That's something that they don't think about. And since some of my nieces and nephews are now adults, and I'm hoping they're wising up. I truly don't know. I had a really uncomfortable conversation with a nephew about him going into the military. And I realize it's his fucking choice, but, you know, I was in the service. I was never in combat, full disclosure. And, but even not being in combat, I saw things that I thought were bullshit, total bullshit. And that's putting it mildly. So I would prefer he didn't go, but he's an adult. It's his fucking choice. But yeah, I gotta tell you, I wake up most days these days, pretty much every day almost, thinking that everybody thinks I'm a piece of shit. I'll walk down the street and I'll see people and they'll look at me and, that person's looking at me. That person thinks I'm a piece of shit. And I know that sounds crazy. Like you want to say, well, Dan, I'm a psychologist from, you know, Barnes Noble University and I have my degree in up the butt crackery and I'm fairly certain that you're crazy. Well, you know something, sir or ma'am, you're probably fucking crazy too. That's okay. It's okay to feel like everybody hates you, but it's not actually true. You don't actually hate everybody, and everybody doesn't hate you. People have lives, complex lives. You have a complex life. Yes, some days I wake up thinking in solipsist terms, because we all do, and we think the whole world is about us, but it isn't. The world is way bigger than each one of us. It's huge, and that's an understatement. Even if I said huge in the way that Donald Trump says huge, the world is pretty fucking huge. And people have all kinds of problems. You have no idea what problems people have. I remember sitting down. When I thought I was getting back on my feet back in 2014 after my divorce, when I felt like I thought I was getting back on my feet, that was a false landing. That was a mirage. Well, anyways, October 2014, I got a lot of accolades because of some of my work at my job. And the CFO of the company I was working at says, would you like to have lunch or something? Or maybe, I don't know. Yeah, maybe I was talking to him about something related to that. But at one point in this conversation over lunch, I got this impression that this guy, this person that probably lives north of 96th Street, probably has, you know, an upper middle class Indianapolis lifestyle, also has a lot of problems, probably has a lot of stress, because that's what I could sense. I mean, he mumbled something about how I should read the Zen of Art, you know, Motorcycle Maintenance. And it was like, you know what, dude, I didn't say this, but I felt like saying, you need a hug. Because it looked like he was in that space. And what's funny is if you saw this guy at any other moment, you'd say, that is the coolest dude ever. Like, he is so cool. He's so together. But it's almost like there was a vulnerability that just popped out at the wrong moment. Now, I later came to realize that this guy did have a lot of stress and had a lot going on. As a lot of people do. And listen, sometimes the stress is a result of stupid shit, you know, people are doing. And if you're doing stupid shit that's killing you on the inside, you either have to stop doing it or figure out a way to do it without it killing you. I have to say, working as a software engineer in the Seattle area, it feels like I am the most hated person. Like, my last job, even on good days, we would be in a meeting, and basically there was me in the corner, and then all the other software engineers who also pretty much happened to be Asian, with the exception of a couple, but they would be all on the other side of the room, basically. And the ones that weren't Asian, they were the old, you know, they were the actual full-time employees. So, and this is the thing, I was a contractor. And if you're a contractor in a software shop, with very rare exceptions, you're a pariah. You're like one of those unclean people in Japan. That's how it feels to be an orange badge at Microsoft or a temporary contractor at Amazon or Google. You feel like a piece of shit. At least that's how you feel. Now, does that mean everybody there thinks you're a piece of shit? I honestly don't know. This is where things get tricky. Because the whole zeitgeist of Seattle these days, the whole spirit of the time, is this really, excuse me, this really crappy, scummy, douchey sensibility concerning quasi-Marxism and weird thoughts about how everybody should just sort of just, you know, not step on people's feelings, but it's okay to beat up on homeless people, and turning human shelter into a pyramid scheme's okay. And if you talk about H-1B visa, well, you're a racist. It's not that you think that people are abandoning the children or the youth. No, you're a racist. So, yeah, in Seattle, excuse me, I got a scratchy throat. I'm going to take a little sip of water. In Seattle, shit. In Seattle, I feel like an outcast. I literally feel like the outsider from that H.P. Lovecraft short story. And I know there's another book called The Outsider. Believe it or not, I'm sure that title shows up a lot in literature. But no, I feel like the outsider from Lovecraft. I feel like an outcast. I sit up here in my room, staring out into the night, and I feel like the worst person here. And everyone knows I'm a scumbag. And there'd be no sadness if I went away. But I do know that as far as being a software engineer in Seattle, it's hell. It's hell. There is no culture here for me. There was one place I tried to apply, and then I just blew up. I just realized I would never get a job there. But there really is no place here for me. And you know, in a way, that's okay, because you kind of become resigned to it. You accept the fact that you grew up in a state, in a place, in a part of the world that was once one thing and became something else. But at the same time, I'm a stubborn son of a bitch. So I'll be damned if somebody says, well, you know, why don't you just move someplace else? Listen, I've lived in Indianapolis. I've lived in other places. I haven't lived everywhere, but life is short. And if your resume has you've lived everywhere on it, that's even worse than my resume. And my resume almost looks like that. I've lived in Nashville. Nashville was actually okay. I don't know. I mean, I was married in Nashville. So you almost, if you think about it in your divorce, like if you're a divorced person and you think about the past, it's hard to sort of separate, well, did I not like a place or did I not like it because I was with somebody? You start asking questions like that. But actually, I really liked Nashville. I don't know. And there was a time in my marriage where it wasn't so bad and it seemed like it could work. But, you know, even Nashville over time, and it was like in 2006 or 7, but the whole culture of software engineering started getting really douchey. And Seattle is the worst. And people waste time on nonsense. And even though I think there are project managers, like the last job I was on, there was a project manager that I think meant well. But even the project managers, they don't even know how to manage. They just sort of let things spin out of control. And then everyone's surprised, well, why didn't this get done right? And then at the end of the day, one or two people become the heroes. But sometimes the heroes are crazy. And sometimes the heroes write really shitty code. So no, I don't hate Chinese people. I don't hate Indian people. I don't hate people because they're from other countries or places. But in Seattle, I feel like pretty much every programmer I work with hates me. And I know that's crazy. I know that's probably not true. But it's sometimes you're going to wake up and you're going to feel like every fucking person on planet Earth hates you. And you might even think, if you're a Christian or religious, if you're not, that's fine. But if you're a Christian like myself, some days you're going to wake up and you think God hates you. And believe me, if you actually believe in God and you think God hates you, that's almost like the deepest form. I mean, here's the thing about the story of Job. You know, a lot of people talk about Job, and Job's a good story. Job's a good story of heartache and pain and loss and everything being taken away and being ground to dust. And knowing that you're being ground to dust because God let the devil do this to you. God let the devil, you know, basically said, devil, you go and launch every form of pain you can at Job. Destroy Job's life, you know. And this is a neat trick because, you know, you think to yourself, well, then God wasn't really doing it. Well, actually, I hate to break it to you. God was. I mean, God owns the devil, okay? That's it. So if God lets the devil off his chain, yeah, that's God doing that. So God unleashed all evil upon Job. And yet, throughout the entire story, Job does not lose his faith. He does not lose his basic faith. He doesn't lose his love for God. He feels pain. You can tell there's anguish. I mean, you read Job, you can tell Job's in a lot of pain, but he doesn't lose his faith. But sometimes you're going to wake up and you're going to feel, you know, maybe not as bad as Job or deservedly so, but you're going to feel, maybe you will. I mean, listen, my tragedies, as bad as they suck, it's not as bad as like having cancer in stage four. You know, my sister going through stage four cancer, that's pretty bad. That's a real painful tragedy. And she had daughters. That's a tragedy. Okay. My tragedies, as bad as they suck to me, don't really compare to a lot of other people. And if you look at the world, if you look at the whole planet these days, and again, I'm not a globalist. So when I talk about this, I'm not talking about globalism. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about understanding that there's a world out there. And there are people who are probably, in fact, don't even think about the whole world. There are parts of your own city. In all likelihood, because I've been to a few cities in recent years, so in all likelihood, there's a part of your city where there's a lot of pain, okay? If you walk down Yesler, you know, Yesler in Seattle, and you walk down past I-5, you'll see a little triangle of pain off to the right, just after you pass I-5, walking down Yesler. You'll see a lot of people living in tents, surrounded by garbage, and in all likelihood, every night, surrounded by rats. And yeah, you'll say, oh, those are scumbags. You'll say those are losers. You'll say to yourself that those are the worst people in the world and they're ruining your property values. You know, if you're a typical Seattleite, you're probably saying a lot of shitbird things right now about the homeless people. But I can tell you, I bet there are homeless people who wake up every single day thinking everybody hates them. And I got to say, in Seattle, yeah, a lot of people are haters on homeless people. I have no idea why. I don't claim to have all the solutions, although frankly, if I had the resources, I think I could solve it better than the city of Seattle. But the bottom line is this. They feel hated all the time. So sometimes everybody, you'll feel like everybody hates you. That doesn't mean they do. Last but not least, the third topic related to the second, circling back, in a way, is sometimes everybody, I think everybody, I don't know if this is true, but I know that I do feel this way, but sometimes a lot of people, maybe everybody, feels lonely. And there are levels of loneliness. When I say lonely, I don't mean that you're a frat brother and you're alone in the frat house over the holidays and you can't see all your bros for 2 weeks. I'm not talking about that state of loneliness. I'm not talking about like, you know, I spent a Thanksgiving or two. I spent one Thanksgiving when I was in Korea monitoring a tactical operations center during an exercise. They need somebody to hang out at the talk. And, you know, the officers pulled their straws, and I was the unlucky one to get the Thanksgiving straw. And so I had Burger King for Thanksgiving. Now, that's Thanksgiving, I think. I want to say that was Thanksgiving, 1997. Thanksgiving 1997, you know. But that's not loneliness. That's just being alone. You know, that's not that bad. I mean the loneliness of that comes with the first two things, that the sometimes you hate everybody, sometimes you feel like everybody hates you. That only leads one direction, and that's the absolute kind of loneliness. That's when you're so alone that you don't think there's one person in the world you can talk to about your problems. And I mean it. I mean really alone. If you want to know how lonely I felt in the last, you know, month, for example, in the last few months, I have felt so lonely at times. I, you know, was hoping a bill collector would call me. That's how lonely I felt at times, you know. And I didn't have a phone for a while, so it would have been difficult for a bill collector to call me. But now that I have a phone, yeah, if I get that lonely, I might call a bill collector just to talk to somebody. That's how lonely I felt at times in the last couple months. Sometimes you're going to feel that alone, that lonely. Sometimes you'll feel so isolated that if the universe were an infinite plane, an infinite flat plane of just desert and sand, and you were standing there and there was nothing, it was silent, no wind, no animals, just a big desert infinitely stretching to the horizon, and no matter how long you walked, no matter how far you walked on this infinite dark plane stretching to the horizon, there's nobody, there's nothing. There's not even houses. It's not even like that Twilight Zone episode where there's houses and a diner and you can make cheeseburgers. There's nothing. There's no sign of people. There are no people. There's nothing. There's no animals. There's no creatures. There's no birds in the sky. It's just an infinite plane of nothing. Sometimes you're going to feel that alone. I know I have. I know I do all the fucking time. And I'd like to say, well, that's okay. It's all right. Like the first two things, hating everybody, and sometimes you feel like everyone hates you. That's something you can work through. And if it happens only once in a while, you know, that's not such a bad thing. I mean, it's probably okay. It's almost probably like a degaussing of the soul. Sometimes I feel like you need to put on the fucking Wagner and hate everybody and watch, you know, Apocalypse Now, but keep replaying the helicopter scene. Sometimes you do need to hate everybody. Sometimes, just for humility's sake, you do need to feel like everyone hates you. Because by God, sir or madam, we don't need another Hitler or Stalin or Mao or Pol Pot or Jim Jones. We don't need more people who are human monsters. So if it takes feeling like everyone hates you once in a while, well, fucking good for you. Because sometimes people do hate you, because sometimes people hate me for legitimate reasons. Because you fuck up. Because you mistreated somebody and you deserve to be hated. Maybe not permanently. Maybe not forever. But sometimes, yeah. But the loneliness thing, this is the thing that can kill the soul. The loneliness that just goes on for infinity. I used to believe, and in fact, I think I told my ex-wife this once. It wasn't, I was lying in this particular case. I mean, there, you know, with respect to my marriage, towards the end, I was very deceptive about my use of marijuana. And I think that was something that just killed the marriage. But in this particular case, I don't think I was lying. I think I once told her that I felt like in my 20s, I was good at being alone. But if I look back, I don't think that's true. I mean, yeah, I was alone a lot, but I don't think I was good at it. I mean, when I was in the Army, I was alone all the time. I didn't have a lot of friends. And even the quote-unquote friends I had, it wasn't like they were always knocking on my door to come by. Nobody wanted to talk to me. It's like, you know, talking to Dan, it was like going to the dentist. Hanging out with Dan was like going to the dentist. That's how I felt when I was in the service in my 20s. That's how I felt when I was in school in my 20s. That's how I felt pretty much my whole 20s. that I was completely alone. It wasn't I was good at it. No one's really good at it. It's more like you become, I don't know. You learn to accept it. You know, you're at peace with it. You're resigned to it. I was resigned to my loneliness. But I was never good at it. And now, as I approach the dark gray years of old age, I know for a fact that probably I suck at it, but probably most people do. A few times before my sister Nancy died, I visited her. I didn't visit her enough. I didn't visit her enough. I don't think I was a good enough brother to her. But a few times before she died, I visited where she lived, and she lived pretty much, you know, this is the thing that I remarked at. At the time, I was still married. But I said to myself when I saw her place, said, this is how I would live if I weren't married. Now, she had been divorced recently, and that's a whole nother painful topic. But she'd been divorced recently, and so she was alone. And I said, you know, if I didn't have anyone in my life, this is how I'd live. And I'm not going to say more about that. But you know, listen, I've never been good at it. Nobody's good at it. And if you're alone long enough, it does kill the soul. It does kill what's inside you. If you're alone long enough. You know, here's the thing about the story of Job that nobody really thinks about. And I'm not sure. You know, I once read The Myth of Sisyphus. And I think it's a very, very good the myth of excuse me, I need to sip some more water here. The Myth of Sisyphus by Albert Camus. Anyways. And the gist of the story, and it's not that complicated because it's pretty much in the title, is that life for people can often feel like an endless process of repeated disaster and failure, where you keep pushing a boulder up a hill and then it perpetually rolls back down again, and you do this forever. And I don't know in the case of Sisyphus whether the boulder rolls over you and crushes you as it goes down, but you can assume that's the case. Assume that life is just this infinite task of, you know, pushing a boulder up a hill and having it roll down on you. And the message of, I think, men like Camus, although I'm not really sure he succeeds, is that you need to kind of be at peace with this and find in the absurdity, because it is absurd. And so, you know, Camus, philosophically, I would probably place him as a kind of existentialist. I don't know if he's as hardcore, you know, as obviously the father, quote unquote, of existentialism, quote unquote, sarcastic quotes, existentialism, Jean-Paul Sartre. But yeah, I don't know if Camus is into it, but I would call him an existentialist. And yeah, sometimes you have to be okay with the fact that life might be that infinite, painful task, never-ending task of just repeated failure. And yeah, you need to find the fun in it sometimes. But the thing about loneliness is that it feels worse than this, because it's not even like, I don't know how to put this. It's as if the entire universe were constructed to be nothing but a source of pain. Sometimes you're going to feel that alone. I know I do. I know that today I did something I didn't want to do. Today I sold my Yamaha keyboard because it was more or less that, or, you know, watching the pin in my head get pulled all the way out as if I were a giant human hand grenade and just losing it. And I don't mean hurting myself or hurting other people. I mean losing it, just feeling completely, totally crazy. Today, I need to take a break. I couldn't afford any weed recently, so I went and I bought some weed. And how did I buy my weed? I bought it by selling my keyboard. And if that sounds like, well, Dan, you must be addicted to weed. No, I'm addicted to trying to avoid the question, the ultimate question, you know. And that's another thing about existentialism. And you probably figured out by now, yeah, there was a time in my life where I would have classified myself in some sense as an existentialist. Although, frankly, looking back, I'm not really sure that there's much of a philosophy there. It really isn't, and I don't want to go into that now, but it is and it isn't. I mean, it is a philosophy in the following sense: existentialism. And you could argue that, you know, men like Kierkegaard and Dostoevsky from the 19th century belong in this class, but existentialism, I think, represents one of the possible, not the only, but one of the possible reactions to modernity. But I think the reaction is intrinsic. I think it's in there. You know, I even think to some extent Nietzsche was an existentialist. If you want to think about what it is a kind of horrific, painful, disgusted reaction to modernity. Yeah, there's a lot about making choices, but the choices are in a context. You know, I don't think for most of history, people were that concerned about deep questions of their existence because they were living and trying to survive and have existence. Okay. Listen, I'll tell you something. Think about when you go running, or if you're in the military. I was never in combat, but think about, you know, some hardcore situation you were in if you're in the military, or if you have a high stress job, like if you fight fires, or you're a surgeon, or even if you're just a business person, you know, and you're working all the time, like actually being a true entrepreneur, a real entrepreneur, not a bullshit one, not an Elon Musk, thank you for my government money and my free Federal Reserve loans bullshit entrepreneur. I mean, a real entrepreneur. If you're a real entrepreneur, a real business person, you're probably stressed all the freaking time. How much time do you have to think about the meaning of your existence when you're that stressed? But the reality is, a lot of people, especially these days, at this particular moment in human history, don't have enough work, don't have enough life, and often don't have enough money to do much. In fact, they're mostly broke, like me. And so what they have a lot of is time, at least currently, to consider how fucked up their reality is. So in some sense, and I don't want to belabor this and go too deep, but in some sense, existentialism is a response to modernity. And then you could say, well, what if, Dan, what if, and here's a, I'm spitballing, Dan, what if loneliness, like, you know, huge epidemics of loneliness are also a reaction to modernity? Now, I'm not anti-technology, by the way, but I do believe in our age we've come under the sway of this philosophy that each and every problem that we need to solve can be solved by the government. And you'd say, well, Dan, are you going to rant about anarchism? In a way, I am. I can tell you that the one thing our society is really fucking up right now is creating any sense of real community. Yeah, there are small little enclaves here and there, but there are huge swaths of our society that's been relegated to almost an engineered perpetual loneliness. On purpose, by design. It's like old people. Did you all know that there was once a day and age where old people stayed at home with a son or a daughter until they died? Did y'all know that? And before you say things like, well, we don't know how to take care of old people, well, I'll tell you this much. I think there's a lot more going on with sickness than just normal sickness. That's a separate topic too. I don't think a lot of the sickness that we're seeing, especially the dementia, is just, well, it's because people are just getting older. Actually, technically speaking, the maximal age, the average age of death is, you know, your life expectancy is getting worse in America, especially your man. I think it peaked in 2017. So all this, well, people are living older. No, stop that bullshit. It isn't just because of that. So there is a lot of disease that we're seeing now amongst the old and the young, amongst children, you know, whether it's autism amongst children or and cancer amongst the old and, you know, dementia. We're seeing a lot of things that I classify as, you know, leaving wounded on the battlefield. And since I already have a podcast about that, I don't really want to talk about it. But yeah, our government, our society, whatever you want to call it, the way we organize ourselves as a structure, in fact, the fact that we've turned it into a structure, it almost creates loneliness for lots of people by design. And then if you add in the whole social media culture, which is totally toxic and bogus. Listen, I think, I'll tell you something. I think email is fine. I think email works. I think there's a lot of ways in which people could talk on the internet to each other that probably is okay. But none of this is a substitute for real human connection. However, currently, things have tilted the direction of disconnect from people and connect to the machine. When, you know, if people ask me with respect to my loneliness, well, Dan, you ever think about the robot apocalypse? And what I want to do is shake them. I want to punch them in the nose. I want to tell them, dude, look the fuck around. Look at what people are doing right now. 9 out of 10 people you see walking down the fucking sidewalk are staring at a little rectangle. The robot apocalypse arrived and you didn't even fucking notice. People are already robots. You know, I try. People say, well, you could wake people up, Dan, if you just talk to people. You could convince them to, like, regain their dignity or something. No. No. When I feel this lonely, when I'm in this place, I would tell you the following. Most people are robots now. They don't realize it. That's how insidious it is. But they're basically following a program. And what's worse is the government has the technology now to, like, send commands, to distribute commands. It's like event-driven programming, literally, literally, figuratively. It's event-driven programming. You know, they throw up a semaphore. And for the software engineers, I maybe you know what I'm talking about. I honestly don't know if you do. But they throw up a semaphore. They throw out a signal, and people respond. It is a multicast delegated network of robots that are constantly waiting. Is a publisher-subscriber model. And yes, most of the people you know, in my opinion, are robots. Most of the people I know are robots. And the ones that aren't pretty much hate me. So in Seattle, I feel desperately lonely most days, pretty much every day. Even the brief moments in 2018, the brief periods of time where I had any semblance of shit being okay, kind of okay. I don't even know how to phrase that, kind of okay. But even in 2018, when I had a few months, you know, here and there where I was working, I had some money, I still felt very alone. I have one person in Seattle who I would call a kind of friend. And it's not his fault. I'm not a very good friend to him. But other than seeing him a couple times, yeah, pretty much 100% alone, even the good times. And that applies to my 20s too. You know, I never had I didn't have any girlfriends in high school. No girlfriends in my 20s. My first girlfriend, technically speaking, was my wife. God, how depressing is that? I met her when I basically was 30. Fuck. The year 2000. What a fucking year. But in my 20s, yeah, it was just like that. You know? So no, I don't know what to tell you. I am almost 50 years old, and what I know is at my age, if it's difficult to find friends in your 20s, especially in the social media bullshit culture, imagine what it's like, man. And I'm not telling you to feel sorry for me. Don't. It is hard at this point in my life to find anybody that I can actually talk to, that actually even remotely communicates with me in a way where both sides, where both people feel like there's anything there. And it's not about education or intelligence, okay? It's not about any of that bullshit. It's just about the fact that I don't buy into this reality that everywhere I go, it's the same stupid shit. And in Seattle, it's the worst. Like, this is everywhere. This nasty, toxic, globalist ooze of disgusting groupthink is all over the planet now, like a black, black goo. But it's really bad in Seattle. You can see the black goo in everybody. If you look close enough at the white of their eyes, like some old X-Files episode, you can see the black goo swirling about. Everywhere I go in Seattle, it's the same nastiness. And what's funny is they all pretend they're doing so much good. You know, they're helping out. They're helping. They're helping. But if it, but the best topic to bring up, and I like bringing this one up, is the whole housing thing, because they will go into a weird mental state where they know they got to do a lot of rationalization in their head. Like, on the one hand, their shitty little house that's barely whatever, 1,000 square feet, maybe even less than that, on a shitty little lot, somehow that's worth $800,000, okay? But on the other hand, they're going to Value Village to buy clothes because they're house poor, and they're constantly bitching about the homeless people. And they do this in a way that is disgusting. They rationalize it in a way that's all fucking elitist bullshit and self-important crap. It's a lie. It's a giant lie. And if you see the lie, if you see the dishonesty, it really does. It's not just that you feel hatred towards them. You feel hatred towards yourself, because guess what? You're a human being too. They're human beings. Human beings allowed this shit to come to existence. You're a human being. I'm a human being. If I wake up and I feel like they're all shitbirds, I have to admit that I'm capable of being a shitbird, because I'm a human being too. That something led most of these people down that road. It's a math problem at that point. It's a matter of statistics. If you see one or two shitbirds, that's just random shitbirds. If most of the people you're surrounded by are shitbirds, you got to look at yourself and see if you see any feathers. Yeah, that's how lonely I feel these days, almost all the time. And I guess, and I'm guessing, that some of you feel the same way. And guess what? It sucks. It sucks to feel that lonely. It sucks to wake up at 2 or 3 a.m. and realize that not only do you feel this much self-hate, this much self-loathing, not only do you feel this alone, not only do you think you hate yourself and everyone hates you and you hate everybody, not only are you this isolated, but you are an infinite plane, an infinite desert, an infinite plane, like in geometry, guys, plane. I don't mean airplane. God, I can't believe I have to explain this. I mean an infinite plane, as in geometry, okay? Think of it as an infinite table if you need to, like, have a mental image. But you're on an infinite plane that stretches to the horizon, and there's nothing there. It's like some weird Salvador Dali picture, but guess what? There aren't any cool fucking melting clocks. There's nothing. It just goes on for infinity. And no one's ever going to find you, and you're never going to find anybody. And I know there are sociopaths and psychopaths in the world. I know there are demons. And demons don't feel alone, you know. They'll cry and they'll bitch, but that's mostly to get control of you. Demons, like the French bulldog, are never really alone. They always have the devil to talk to. But most of us normal people, we can be that lost. We can feel like Job. And here's the thing, and I want to return to this because I was going to make a point, but I screwed it up. The story of Job ends, you know? The thing about the myth of Sisyphus is that imagine if the story of Job never ended, like it just went on forever. There was never going to be an ending. That all that, you know, that God was going to do that experiment forever. Now, I don't believe God is cruel. I believe God, you know, loves us. Believe it or not. But I also think that God, like me, gets pissed off a lot, probably. If you read the Old Testament, I think it's, you know, I hate to say it, but yeah, I think there's evidence to state the following. God gets pissed off. God gets really angry sometimes. And when God gets truly angry, well, let's just say things like Yellowstone calderas pop off. But yeah, there's the thing. What if God wanted to do the experiment, but forever? What if it is an infinite plane? What if there is no end to your loneliness? What if it all ended tomorrow, but you woke up and it was all the same? I mean, that would be a perfect definition of hell. In some sense, and that's kind of the point I try to make, at least the point I've been trying to make in recent podcasts, is that for me, living in Seattle feels like hell, and there is no escape. I don't have the money to go anywhere, and I know in my heart that there really is nowhere to go. And you know what? I grew up in this fucking state. I grew up in Washington State. Why don't I have a right to die here? Oh, because I'm not Asian enough? Because I'm not gay enough? You know what? I don't hate gay people, but I will never be gay enough. I don't hate Asian or Indian people, but I will never be Asian or Indian, okay? I will not pretend to be. It's not going to happen. So either the culture changes in such a way that someone like me can be accepted, or I'm simply going to die here alone, and I've come to accept that. And as far as Christians go, I kind of want to right now. I want to offend some of you. There are a lot of people out there who call themselves Christians. They are not. There are a lot of, you know, if I ever did commit suicide, which I don't intend to do right now, but if I ever did kill myself and go to hell, I expect to see a lot of Christians there, the quote-unquote Christians, people who called themselves Christians. You know, like the true definition of the Antichrist in the book of John. I shouldn't say the true definition, but the core definition of the Antichrist isn't the son of Satan. The definition are people who pretend to be Christ, who pretend to be Christians. So yeah, there are a lot of Christians out there who are pretending to be, and then when they wake up on Monday morning, participate in great evil. And for all of you, you know, fuck you. You know, the only thing that I could see that would be good about going to hell is I'll see you all there and at least I can mock you. Although I don't think I'll get to mock you because maybe this is hell. That's the weird question, philosophers of the night. What if you are in hell? I mean, if you're lonely like me and you feel at all like me, like let's say you just feel 50% like me right now, you might feel like you're in hell. What I'm going to tell you is something that's difficult, and it's not easy because I don't know how to say it. I don't think you should harm yourself. I don't think you should harm anyone else. Just because you feel like you're in hell, that's not an excuse to harm people. So before you take this as some excuse, you need to listen, okay? Just because you're morbidly sad, just because you feel a deep state of ennui, doesn't mean you should hurt yourself or hurt somebody else. It probably means you need to come up with a solution, and if the solution is selling your Yamaha to get a little weed or calling up somebody that you hadn't talked to in a million years or I don't know. I don't want to recommend. I don't know if I can recommend that suicide hotline, the one that Google shows, because I talked to a Filipino woman and she was horrible. So yeah, I felt like killing myself after calling the suicide hotline. So I'm not going to say I recommend that, but try to call somebody. If you have to call bill collector, so you can have a conversation with somebody, call them. You know, go for a walk and see if you can't strike up a conversation. You never know, because this is the theory. This is the tiny slice of optimism. I can't believe I'm going to bring up that word. It's the weed. This is the tiny slice of optimism I'm going to leave you with. Everyone does not hate you. Everyone doesn't. Probably most people don't know you. Probably 99.9% of the people will never know you. This is a big world. But people in your own little community of people, they don't all hate you. They probably feel like, you know, the same way you do. And you don't hate everybody. Some days you feel like it, but you really don't. You're just in a bad mood. It happens. Human beings have bad moods. We're complicated creatures. It's okay. But you don't hate everybody. So if you go to that coffee shop and you sit down, if you go on to Meetup, you know, Meetup's not so bad, and you go to, you know, meet with some people, real connections. Maybe that's a way out. Maybe that's a escape hatch. Maybe the myth of Sisyphus is a cautionary tale, but you don't have to go down the road of the infinite boulder, the infinite mountain, the infinite pain. Anyways, I left you with a little bit of optimism, and for me, these days, that's an accomplishment. Have a great day.